It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Author and lecturer Dan Savage is probably best known to public radio listeners for his sex advice column, Savage Love, and appearances on This American Life and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. His latest media project is called Dan Savage's Hump Film Festival Tour, and it's coming to Pittsburgh. Before we begin our conversation, we'll take a moment to say that this discussion may not be appropriate for younger or sensitive listeners. Dan Savage's Hump Festival tour goes up at 9 o'clock tonight at the Row House Cinema on Butler Street, and he joins us by phone from Seattle. Dan Savage, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Explain to our listeners what the Hump Film Festival is.
Well, about a decade ago at The Stranger, which is my home paper in Seattle, a coworker and I started joking that we should just announce in the paper that we were having an amateur porn film festival and do a call for submissions just to see what we would get in the mail. And we got so many films and so many really great ones and so many really funny and interesting ones that we decided we had to go through with it. So we booked a theater to do the film festival at. And the question then was, would people come and sit in the movie theater next to strangers in the dark and watch porn the old-fashioned way, you know, the way their grandparents saw, The Devil and Miss Jones and,
sure.
and other films whose titles I won't name. And people did. People poured out and came and drove to the theaters, and the festival took off. And it just was this sort of secret little film festival in Seattle and Portland for the last nearly a decade, where every year we would do 5-minute max length films, and we would get everything: erotica, animation, hardcore pornography, and the kind of porn that sometimes really appeals to people who don't like pornography, because this is not mainstream, it's not commercial, and it's made by friends and lovers, and it really is an expression of who they are. And genuinely, they're not performing for the cameras, they're not doing something that they don't enjoy for the money, they're doing it for the joy. And every year we would hear from people in other cities that they wanted to see Hump, and where could they look at the videos online, and where could they buy the DVDs, and we would have to say, there are no DVDs, nothing is online. Because the deal we made with people in Seattle and Portland was, at Hump, you could be a porn star for the weekend, not forever on the internet. Because at the end of every festival, we destroyed the only copies we had of the films, and we policed the screenings. We literally have bouncers walking the aisles during the screenings to make sure nobody has a phone in their hand, so nobody can take a photo or make a video during the screening. So really, it was there and gone, which, you know, online porn is not. Online porn will haunt you forever. And so we couldn't send it on tour. But after hearing people in the cities for so long, this year, a year ago, we decided to ask the filmmakers who'd participated in Hump over the last 3 or 4 years if they wanted their films to tour. And enough filmmakers who made really great submissions for Hump over the last few years, a lot of the award-winning submissions, because there's an audience ballot and a $5,000 Best in Show award of Hump, plus some other cash prizes. Enough of them said yes that we were able to put together kind of a little, you know, smorgasbord of Hump favorites and Hump picks and Hump winners from the last few years and send it out on the road.
How many entries did you receive?
That first year?
Yeah, like just a rough number.
I think we got 75 the first year, and that's saying something because that first year the max film limit was 12 minutes. So we thought, you know, 12 minutes, you watch a full-length porn film and it's tedious after a while. Well, it's amazing how tedious a 12-minute porn film can be. So we lowered the running length to 8 and then 5. So the first year we got 75 submissions that were roughly 12 minutes apiece. And, you know, you couldn't do a 10-hour festival, a 10-hour program. So we had to, you know, cut films that we liked. So now it's 5-minute length films. We usually do 20, 24 films in a Hump festival. And we get 100, 200, 300 submissions every year now, just from Seattle and Portland.
And how do you end up deciding which films make the cut? On what basis?
You know, it's really hard sometimes because on the one hand, you know, we want to be political a little bit. We want people to represent. We want everybody who, you know, is out there. We want gay and lesbian and bi and trans and vanilla and kinky films in the festival. But they have to be good and they have to be interesting. Audiences really like films, but at Hump, there's so many filmmakers do this thing you never see pornographers do, which is they marry sexy and funny. So you have films that are really really funny, really very humorous, but also very very sexy and very much a turn-on at the same time, which is kind of how sex works in real life, that you can have sex with somebody and it can be passionate 1 second, and you can like be laughing in each other's arms the next second and then go right back to it. Hump does that. But it can be difficult picking the films for the festival. Every year, it seems like there's something in the air. You know, one year we got we didn't ask for it. It wasn't in the call for submissions. We got six different James Bond parodies. People love to do their porn film parodies for some reason, even for Hump. And we couldn't have six James Bond parodies in the festival, so we had to pick the best one. And there were probably, you know, others that year out of those six that if they'd been submitted in a year where they weren't competing against six other James Bond parodies, they would have been in the festival too. So sometimes, you know, it's a little bit like cutting the baby in half. Very Solomonic decisions.
And how do you get the word out? Or, you know, if somebody wants to submit a film, how do they do it?
If you're thinking about submitting a film, and you're in Pittsburgh, and now it's open to the whole country, anybody can submit a film, your best idea, you know, best bet, go to the festival this weekend, and then go to humptour.com. You know, go to the festival so you can see what hump films are like, see what the festival's like. And then go to humptour.com and click on submit, and you'll find all the information you need about how to make and submit a film for Hump.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with sex advice columnist Dan Savage, who is taking his Hump Film Festival tour. It's coming to Pittsburgh tonight. It'll be at the Row House Cinema on Butler Street. Before I move on to other topics, for you, Dan, what is the goal of the festival? Ultimately, what do you want to see result from all this effort?
Originally, it was we just want to have fun, and that's still the goal of the festival, to entertain, enlighten people also. When we watch pornography, when we watch erotica or read erotica, we only read or watch exactly what turns us on. When you go to the internet, when you look at internet pornography, you're going to look only at your stuff. And what's really, I think, good about Hump and its sort of its mission, which is subtle and not, you know, we're not beating people over the head, is you get people together and everybody watches each other's stuff for a change. And you have audiences full of straight people watching gay porn, gay people watching straight porn, vanilla people watching kinky porn, cis people watching trans porn, and vice versa. And this really magical thing happens. At first, people are sort of shocked by the differences. You can see people thrown back in their chairs. You know, straight guys who would never in a million years watch gay pornography, watching gay pornography and sort of, you know, having their socks knocked off. And, you know, gay men watching lesbian pornography, watching lesbians have sex, and a similar reaction. And then something really cool begins to happen over the course of the evening as the 2 hours go by. Everyone begins to cheer after each film. At first, it's the differences that everyone can see, the plumbing differences, the orientation differences, the gender expression differences. And then people begin to see the similarities that are under the surface about love, about lust, about desire, about vulnerability, about pleasure, about humor, that those are the things that whatever our differences are on the surface, around sexual orientation, around kink, around gender expression, underneath all those other impulses, those are exactly the same.
You are best known for your column and as the founder of the It Gets Better program. How does the It Gets Better program help young adults in the LGBT community to see a positive future for themselves?
You know, it used to be, you talk to gay men, lesbians in their 70s, 80s, and a real commonality of their experience growing up is, you know, you talk to a gay elder, a gay man, 85 years old, and he'll tell you that he, when he was a kid, thought he was the only boy on earth and felt that way, thought he was the only gay person in the world. Nobody grows up that way anymore. Gay kids know that there are gay adults out there. And there are gay kids out there, queer kids, lesbian, bi, trans kids, who are being very viciously and brutally bullied. And they know that there are healthy, loved, successful gay, lesbian, bi, trans adults in the world. They don't know how you get to be one. And they don't know that it gets better. Like, it's a cliche now. We made it a cliche because the program had such success. But they don't know how it gets better for them as individuals. And what the It Gets Better Project provides is for that bullied queer kid, the perspective and advice and wisdom of the adult. When you think about a kid who's bullied for his race or her faith, they go home to parents of the same race and the same faith that they can turn to for support, who are living proof, just the fact that they're standing there, that you can get through this. But all too often, a gay boy who's being bullied at school or a lesbian girl being bullied at school goes home to straight parents that they don't feel they can open up to safely, or more tragically, straight parents who are also bullying them. You know, gay kids are four times at risk of suicide. Gay kids who are rejected by their families, whose families are merely hostile, not beating them up, not throwing them out of the house, just hostile. Those kids are at eight times greater risk of suicide. And so what the It Gets Better Project provides to LGBT kids is that wisdom that, you know, the African-American kid growing up in a relatively white suburb who's being bullied for his race, that he can go to his parents for. The It Gets Better Project provides that queer kid with that adult queer role model that they may not have in the home.
And how do you see the It Gets Better program growing?
You know, when it started, people were like, oh, you should start a hotline. And we were like, you know, the Trevor Project does that, and they do that really well. And we didn't want to duplicate or compete for no reason. And people said, oh, you should do programs in high schools and middle schools. We said, you know, GLSEN does that, and they do it really well. We are doing what we do, which is we are creating this archive of testimony, wisdom, support, and a dialogue. Everybody who creates an It Gets Better video has to upload it to YouTube themselves to create their own YouTube account. So you will see people in the comment threads on individual videos interacting with their creators, and in a way they become counselors to the kids who are responding to their videos. And we're going to keep doing that. We benefited from so much free media, so much attention. The president did one, the project won an Emmy, that a lot of kids were hearing about it just in the news, you know, from their parents in some cases. Now that that hoopla has sort of died down and the project goes forward, we have to do some outreach to make sure that the, you know, the LGBT kids who are 13 now, who were 10 when the project launched, are finding out about it. So we're doing outreach, but we're just, you know, building that archive and maintaining it, and that's expensive.
And this may seem like a silly question in lieu of all that we've discussed up to this point, but do you find that young members of the LGBT community find it easier to approach you about advice with regard to sex and other things than it is for them to approach a family member?
Well, absolutely. The stakes are very high for a lot of LGBT kids when it comes to approaching family members. You know, LGBT people, depending on which stat you think is most credible, are anything from 1.8 to 5 to 8% of the population. Yet LGBT youth are 40% of homeless kids, because so many queer kids, when they come out or they're outed to their families, are thrown out of the house, thrown out of the streets, become homeless. So a lot of LGBT kids fear coming out to their parents. Maybe their parents have said homophobic or transphobic things in the past that they've forgotten, but their kids remember. Or maybe their parents are honestly actually homophobic or transphobic, and their kid knows that they can't turn to them for support. So it's often easier for an LGBT kid to confide in someone like me, someone who's at a safe distance, someone who isn't going to tell their parents. You know, it can be very scary for a gay kid who knows other gay kids who've been thrown out of the house, or knows other gay kids who've been beaten up by their parents when they came out to them. It can be even scary for them to tell a teacher, tell somebody at their church, God help them, because so many churches are responsible for so much of the homophobia and transphobia in this world, but they can't come out to people at their church, they can't come out to a parent, a teacher. They don't want to tell someone in their parents' orbit for fear it gets back to their family, which could, again, have really dire consequences for them. So they'll write me at Savage Love. They'll write, you know, they'll get on Twitter, create a fake Twitter account, and start online Twitter relationships with people they think they can trust, people they can go to for advice. And some of those kids, because they're reaching out in desperation online, are preyed upon. And it's not because gay people are so terrible. You know, those kids would rather be turning to their own family members for support, but they're afraid of their own family members. If you don't want your kid reaching out online to scary sex advice columnists with porn festivals like me, you should make sure your gay kid, your queer kid, your trans kid understands that you love and support them, which means you have to demonstrate that level of support for your queer kid before your queer kid comes out. You know, most kids are going to be straight, but a small percentage are going to be queer. You need, as a parent, to say something to your kid, whether you believe they're straight or gay or trans or not, because not all queer kids are obviously queer. So you may have a kid that you think is totally straight, that you think is doing fine, who's miserable and unhappy and isolated and being bullied for being queer, and perhaps suicidal because that kid is queer, and that kid isn't turning to you for love and support because they fear you, or they don't believe they can trust you, and that's tragedy. You know, we've heard from parents at the project who only found out that their kids were gay after their kids attempted suicide. And if they had known that their kid was gay, they would have shown their support, but they didn't think their kid was gay, so they didn't. You can't take that risk with your kid's life.
Do you find yourself wishing that there had been a program like this when you were young?
I get asked that question a lot, and I always say that there kind of was. I wish there had been something like the internet when I was young. I wish there had been this much support at my fingertips. But I was really lucky in that I grew up in Chicago. I was 13, 14 years old in 1979, 1980. And so there were visibly gay people in the world then. And I remember very distinctly when I was a child being at the movies with my parents and seeing two men in line in front of us holding hands. And that was a tremendously risky and brave thing for them to do in 1977 or whenever that was. And I looked at them and I, you know, my parents were not happy about these guys and were saying rude things to each other about them that I could hear. And I looked at those guys and went, oh, right. Okay, I get it now. You know, they're weird, which is what my mom kept saying, look at those weird men. And I was standing there thinking as a child, oh, I'm weird like they are. And look at them. They're in love. They're happy. They're fine. And I'll be fine, too. And so those two guys, and, you know, I owe them such a debt. Those two guys, wherever they are now, you know, and I hope, I pray to God that they survived the AIDS epidemic. In a way, they saved my life. Just as so many people who created It Gets Better videos have saved the lives of other queer kids.
We're talking with sex advice columnist Dan Savage, who's bringing Dan Savage's Hump Festival. It's the Hump Film Festival tour, and it's at 9 o'clock tonight at the Row House Cinema on Butler Street. A couple more questions for you, Dan, before we let you go. One is, do you think that professional athletes coming out is also making it better for the LGBT community?
Absolutely. We need everybody who's gay, lesbian, bi, or trans to be out. It's wonderful that Jason Collins is out. He's going to be a role model and inspiration to so many gender-conforming gay boys who are athletic, who in the past felt that they couldn't be gay or couldn't come out because, you know, they weren't gay cliches, they weren't stereotypes. But I don't want to live in a world where, you know, the gay kid who wants to be a hairdresser or wants to be on Project Runway when he grows up feels like there's something wrong with him. You know, it's wonderful that there are Jason Collins gay men in the world, and it's just as wonderful that there are, you know, all those wonderful, creative, talented gay boys and gay men on Project Runway. But it's hugely important for everyone to be out. Ellen Page just came out, and she's going to be, and she is an inspiration to many young lesbians. I believe that people have a moral obligation and a moral responsibility to be out. I think it is, and we need to remember that it's safe now for the Jason Collinses of the world to come out because the hairdressers and fashion designers and ballet dancers were out before him. Since the beginning of the struggle for LGBT equality, it's been the people who can't hide who stood up first and fought because they didn't have the luxury of hiding. So it was, you know, to a large degree, early in the fight, the effeminate men, the masculine women, the drag queens and the trans folks. And then when the HIV epidemic came along, the AIDS crisis came along, people who were dying of HIV/AIDS, who no longer could hide because they were obviously sick, they were obviously dying of AIDS, and they came out and fought. And now you see more people out in all walks of life, and that's wonderful, but we should never forget who started this revolution, who started this movement, which were the sissies and the bullbikes.
Public radio listeners have heard you on This American Life. Will you be doing more with them in the future?
I hope so. It's always wonderful to work with Ira and his crew. No intended insult or anything. I just think it's the best show on public radio. Regardless of my involvement, I'm a fan. I have the This American Life app on my phone. I listen to shows at the gym while I work out. I love that show.
Dan Savage has been our guest. Dan Savage's Hump Film Festival comes to Pittsburgh tonight, 9 o'clock at the Row House Cinema on Butler Street. Dan joining us from Seattle by phone. Dan, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, and actually there are screenings all weekend, not just tonight. So go to humptour.com and look at Pittsburgh, and you'll find all the screenings.
Thank you for that update. I appreciate that. And thank you again. Safe travels.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
And we'll have more Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.